理课堂听 class.com
Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. This is your Advanced Studio Classroom. Thanks for joining us today as we continue down in South Pacific diving with the sharks. Here we are back to our article, and it's not really the sharks, it's the dolphins we're going to talk about today. Isn't that right, everyone?
That's right.
Yes, it is.
And this is Doris Broome, and going to be on the panel here with you. And also, we have our teachers or our panelists who are often with us. We have Phil. Phil, I'm so glad you could come to this article because you've been there.
Yes, it's a real privilege. I'm glad I can be here. Yesterday I mentioned that my wife and I took our honeymoon here, so we have very good memories of scuba diving here in the South Pacific.
Now, would you like to tell me how many years ago that was?
That was about 5.5 years ago.
And you still remember all those good, beautiful places?
Yes. We use the word evoke, which, you know, brings back good memories. So for me, it evokes very positive memories.
Good. So I think he'd be a good salesman for going down there. And Bill, wouldn't you like to go there sometime?
Well, I would love to go there, Doris. After reading this article, and I've spoken with a couple of people about Tahiti and Bora Bora, and it just sounds fantastic. I would love to stay in one of these houses or these resorts that are right over the water.
And what about you, Ethan? You're going to be going back to Canada soon. I don't think they have anything like this in Canada.
Well, no, we don't. Canada is very, very different from the tropics. And I was just thinking about all the different travel places we talk about and how I'd love to go to each one because they just sound so fascinating. And I think, again, with this one, I'd love to go and be on the beach in Tahiti or just explore, go diving, get a chance to go down and see these reef sharks. I think it would be fascinating.
You know, a lot of students, university students and other people in the States and Canada and Europe, they go to these resort places and get jobs for the summer. And they work for very little money, but they get fed and they get a place to stay and they get to go snorkeling or scuba diving. And you see students all over in these resort places, don't you?
That's true. Unfortunately, if you want to work here, you better be able to speak French also because this is a part of French Polynesia, so it is a French territory, and there are a large number of visitors who come from France here.
Well, I hope they can also speak English.
Oh, yes, they can speak English too.
Okay. I'm sure they probably have people who can speak Japanese and Chinese and all different languages because they're trying to get more tourists here.
Well, they have tourists, as you mentioned yesterday, Doris, especially a heavy influx of tourists from Germany and the Scandinavian countries because of the cold weather there. They just love to go and get to the tropics.
And, you know, the people in Norway and those northern countries, every summer they'll put up a sign, gone for the summer or gone for July and August or we went to Spain or something. In North America, we usually feel we get a couple weeks off. We don't get to just take the summer off. But they're used to doing that up there, and they go down where it's nice and warm. They really know how to live, I think.
Well, it's a whole different culture. I believe the summertime in July and August also is the time of the Northern Lights, so they don't have a nighttime there in Scandinavia. So maybe it's a good time to head down to Tahiti and at least have a regular schedule on a day, night and day.
Well, we're going to find out what's so nice about this place. Now, there are a lot of beautiful places, but the South Pacific is supposed to be very romantic. There was a whole play or like an operetta written on that, a movie called South Pacific, wasn't there?
That's right. And so it takes place in this area right here. Also, you may have heard of a very famous author, James Michener, who wrote about this area as well.
Right. It's a very, very romantic, popular area for all people. And they have what they call the native people, who remind us a little bit about the native people in other countries in Asia, too, indigenous people.
Well, you keep saying it's romantic, Doris, but I keep looking up and I keep seeing extreme sports at the top of my page. Now, how do those two go together?
Well, maybe when the man is trying to show the woman how strong and brave he is, he can go out there and swim with those sharks. I don't know. Did you do that, Phil?
Well, we didn't swim with sharks. Of course, yesterday we talked about pass diving, which is where you actually are diving in the very strong currents. I think that's why they refer to it as an extreme sport, because that could maybe be dangerous.
Well, you notice in today's lesson here on page 19, where it says day 10 here, it says diving in French Polynesia isn't all sharks. So it's not going to be all about that. Let's find out what it is about. Let's read The Dolphin's Delight.
Dolphin's Delight. Diving in French Polynesia isn't all sharks. One day during a dive, half a dozen dolphins showed up. We were swimming over to a reef at Rangiroa when two divers started pointing and waving. The dolphins emerged slowly from the deep blue. At first, we could only discern a blob. Then, the dolphins separated into distinct shapes and got close enough for us to see shades of silver skin and scars. Their echolocating squeaks vibrated in our heads. They swam in formation, looping and twirling. The divers' exhaled air rose in bubble sheets, and the dolphins cut in and out of the curtain in a surreal ballet. "The crazier you act, the closer they'll get," Randy said. And he was right. At this point, novice divers might find themselves in over their heads. We were in fast currents, bouncing with the dolphins, up to 15 feet 1 minute, down to 60 feet the next. There were more relaxing dives, of course. At Apataki, the fish hole site was a garden of hard coral and fish. Platinum African pompano, lionfish, snapper of all kinds, plus an assortment of butterfly fish and angelfish.
So French Polynesia isn't all sharks. And thinking of the butterfly fish and the angelfish, if you want to know what these fish look like, you can look them up on the web. Just put down the names of the fish and you can see beautiful pictures of them. Look in encyclopedias, or if you go in any big bookstore, you can see all of these books on animals, fish. And it's just fun to see how many kinds there are.
Well, and I think what's interesting, I was talking to someone from Asia here, and they were mentioning how they get a little annoyed at English because we have all these different types of fish, but we never say fish after a lot of them. We just say cod or salmon or snapper, and most people have a hard time knowing what that is. And so we were kind of laughing about how English is that way, whereas in the Mandarin, you always add the yu or the fish after it so that you know what it is.
Well, of course, by the time they're in advance, they probably know that, but you have a good point there.
Well, the beauty of the Internet, Doris, is I was able to call up these different kinds of fish and see pictures of all the tropical fish. It's just beautiful, all the colors. I imagine when Phil and Liz were there, you were able to see all these different colors and also the coral, too.
That's right. So we had beautiful colors with the fish, also the water and the coral as well. Just a really beautiful scene in the underwater world.
In the northern part of the hemisphere, when you get to the United States and over in Germany, in that area, the fish are not as colorful. They have a lot of good fish to eat. But when you go down to the Caribbean Sea, down that way, and then you go to a lot of places in Florida, and then, of course, to Malaysia and down to this area, then we have these tropical and subtropical fish. And they're the ones that are just so beautiful. So many colors. You cannot believe how many colors there are.
I remember snorkeling in the Caribbean, Doris, and there were some fish there that were pretty big. They were about a meter long, and they were a rainbow. They literally were a rainbow. I was just amazed. I couldn't take my eyes off these fish, and for half an hour just watched a couple of them.
It's hard to believe that there are so many different kinds. So now let's talk about the dolphins. We all know what dolphins look like, and people have a very friendly feeling about dolphins. They say dolphins are one of the most intelligent mammals that there are.
Well, I think it was very interesting, and I've always enjoyed going to the aquarium and seeing the dolphins when they have the dolphin shows, and they're a very beautiful animal to watch, and they're also, I would say, a little bit boisterous, and they're always having fun, it seems. And so it was just a really neat, it's really neat to be able to go and see them having fun, and yet that they're also so smart.
Well, they really are. And you can imagine if you were in the ocean like this And you all of a sudden, about a half a dozen dolphins would show up. Wouldn't you be excited about it, Phil?
Oh, I'd be very excited about it. And, Doris, you mentioned that the dolphins are very intelligent. They can communicate underwater with their squeaks. It mentions a word, echolocating, on the second column of page 19 near the top. Those echolocating squeaks they make, the word just means that they send out the sound, and the sound wave then comes back, and they use that to locate the position of fish or objects underwater.
Right. And so they also swim in kind of formations. They have some front and the back and then the side. Just like airplanes fly in a formation, these dolphins kind of swim in a formation.
For instance, we might think of, Doris, we look up in the sky and maybe see some birds. For instance, geese or ducks flying in a certain formation when they are migrating. Dolphins, in much the same way, will have a certain pattern when they are swimming towards something.
And then, of course, it says the divers exhale air, because the divers are, of course, having air come up rows in the bubble sheets, and the dolphins cut in and out of the current, and it looked like some kind of a unreal, surreal, not of this world, kind of a ballet, the dolphins and the divers. And I guess Yvette was being quite romantic when she wrote about this, and very artistic, you could say.
Well, I think so, and the idea of surreal is that it's almost like a dream, and you can just kind of get the idea that these dolphins are here, and they're playing with the air bubbles, and they're weaving in and out, and it would probably be very beautiful to watch, too, because they're so quick, and they move so agilely in underwater that it would be very beautiful.
When it says the crazier you act, the closer they'll get. So they kind of want to come up and play with you.
That's right. Dolphins are very friendly animals. They like to interact with humans. And the divers and the dolphins together, like you said, the air bubbles and the dolphins swimming in formation forms almost a very beautiful picture, almost like a painting.
And you look at the picture that we have here. I think that picture is of Bora Bora, isn't it?
That's right. That's a picture of Bora Bora. And you can see that there is an island in the center, which is a part of the old volcano. And then the islands which go around the outer ring form that atoll. And in the center between the outer islands and the inner part is what we would call the lagoon, where the water is very shallow and calm.
Well, now, as we look at this picture on page 19, do you think that the water is very deep in between all these atolls here, or is it quite shallow, do you think?
The water there in the middle part, the lagoon, is actually quite shallow. But as you go past the outer ring into the deeper ocean, then, of course, it becomes deeper.
Well, now, this says at this point, these new divers, the novice divers, they might find themselves doing something that they're not able to do, above their ability. What phrase lets us know that they might be in trouble?
Well, we use the term in over their heads, and I thought this was quite interesting. For me, I would think being tethered to a rock like we talked about yesterday and fluttering in the current and trying to fight against a current would be very difficult. But she says that probably most people would be able to do that. But to swim with these dolphins, it might be that a novice diver would be in over his head. Now, that's surprising to me.
Well, the visual of in over your head is very clear, Doris, of, for instance, water over our head. But we might hear this idiom to be used, for instance, in many other cases in life. We might say, maybe in the business world, if somebody is working at a job that they really can't do the job, we might say, oh, that guy's in over his head, which means his abilities aren't up to quite doing the task.
Well, if you might be doing something financially and it's more money than you thought it would be, and you said, well, I've really bought this property and I can't pay it off and I'm in over my head now.
Mm-hmm.
And here you could say that it's used almost more literally, because it says that these currents could carry you up 15 feet 1 minute and down 60 feet the next. So you could suddenly go down like almost 50 feet in this current, you know, real quickly.
Now that would really be almost dangerous, really.
Well, we talked about that yesterday, Doris, as far as the currents and the tides, and you can't be careless, and we see here how quickly somebody can go up and down 45 feet, and it's really powerful.
So I think it's very important when you are scuba diving that you stay at a certain level. And, of course, you have a little meter there with you, and you look at it and see. And if you go down too deep, then you have to come up slowly. But when you're with a current, there's no way you can come up slowly. It just pushes you up. So you could get air bubbles, too. It would be dangerous. But anyway, the more relaxing dives, of course, like the Apataki and the fish hole site, was a garden of hard coral and fish. Can you imagine a beautiful garden under the water with coral and many, many colors of fish going in and out? Little ones, big ones, yellow ones, bright blue ones, just like it's just almost unreal.
That's right, and we see several of the fish that they saw here. The first is Platinum African Pompano, and the platinum is probably referring to the color of these fish that's kind of got a silvery platinum gleam to it.
And you talk about the beauty of it all, Doris. I'm wondering, you've been scuba diving. How long can you stay underwater and admire the beauty?
Well, a lot of it depends on how much you breathe. Like, for instance, if you're frightened by something, all of a sudden you start to breathe faster because you're a little bit afraid, so you use your air faster. If you breathe slower, and you can last a long time. Most people don't stay more than an hour underwater. But if you can stay, depending on, you have a little gauge to see how much air you have. And you might have 2 or 3,000 PSI when you go down per inch. And when it gets down to 500, you're supposed to come up because you might need that last one. So you go with a buddy and you point to them and you show them your gauge and they look at. And then if they run out of air, you have to use each other's, which is called buddy breathing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of dangerous. I've never had to do that. Mm-hmm.
I think another thing that people have to be aware of is that there's great pressure under the water as you go down deeper. And if you suddenly change 40 feet deeper, then that pressure will greatly increase and your lungs don't really have a chance to adjust.
Right. So when you get out, you might have what they call the bends and you get air bubbles and you might die. But if you – they tell you how to do that. So if you're down 40 feet, you go up slowly and you go up 10 feet and you wait a couple minutes. Then you go up another. But if you just go down about 20 feet, you don't have to worry about that. So I don't like to go too deep because I don't have to worry about that pressure. And then you don't have to – can get up a lot mm-hmm. faster too.
Well, I think, too, we were talking one of the breaks, and you had mentioned that when you go too deep, you lose some of that tropical beauty. You get down, and the fish no longer have those beautiful colors. And I think looking here, seeing these fish that would have the beautiful, vibrant colors and the different spines, the lionfish has all these different spines that stick out off of them, and it would be very, very beautiful to be able to go and see fish like this.
Well, a lot of places they have, it's like a wall, and you go down the wall, and you're swimming there, and you can go up and down just as easily, like you're flying or something. And if you see all these fish in there sticking their heads out, and there's little rocks, and you can start to go down this wall, and you don't realize you're going down 20 feet. You're following the fish, so you're not just in open sea. And these walls are where all these little fish come out, and they live in there, and in the coral, so that's what's beautiful. Well, let's go on to see what they say about the majestic manta rays. Manta rays are quite frightening when you look at them. We call them, they look like black devils when they're down there in the water. They look really big, but they're calling them majestic. Let's find out about them.
Majestic manta rays. Manta rays soon emerged. 2 dozen, some flapping on the surface, more swooping back and forth below. Each was easily 12 feet across. They came at us, their huge white mouths open to catch plankton, passing under us, over us, beside us. At one point, half a dozen rays filled my camera viewfinder, a swirl of wings and tails and gaping mouths. Several had remoras attached to their backs like white flags. One actually bumped into me, brushing my shoulder with a silky, soft push.
Did you see any manta rays at all when you were there, Phil?
We did see some manta rays, but I don't remember them being that big, almost 12 feet across. That's very, very large.
Well, they do have large ones, and they have small ones, just like a lot of other ones. But usually the average one would be at least 3 feet. And they're really big because they're kind of flat-looking, and they're very black-looking, and they're flapping those things, and if they're kind of looks like they're flying like a big bat under there. It's kind of frightening sometimes, They're not really that frightening, but I like to keep away from them anyway.
If you look at the bottom of page 20, we have a picture of one of these, and you can see just why we talk about that they look kind of like a devil. And sometimes you will hear these referred to as devil rays as well, and that's just because the way they look, it looks like they are a devil, but they are a type of ray or ray fish that swims underwater.
Right. Well, the lionfish are very beautiful. There's usually two or three of them together, and they look like some kind of a tropical, you know, animal in Africa or something. They're so beautiful, but they're poisonous, and you don't dare touch them. So you see these lionfish with these beautiful colored fins, and you kind of want to look at them, but you say, well, I think I'll keep away from them.
You had talked about that, Doris, not wanting to touch the lionfish, and then also you had mentioned during
a stonefish,
and
right.
There's also sea urchin that you can step on and get spikes that go through your feet, and that can poison you also.
We have to be very careful with the ocean. Some people like to pick up shells, and they'll pick up a shell that has these little kind of snails in them that has a stinger on it, and they'll put it in their pocket, and then that could sting them, and they could become paralyzed because there's still a living organism inside of those. So you have to be a little careful what you touch, but just look, you're okay.
Well, I think what's interesting is that even though these manta rays are very, very large, we say they're 12 feet here, that they're eating plankton. And I think about, you think about plankton as a very, very small sea organism, and that very, very small, it's not going to hurt anything. And so you think about that this manta ray, you would think that something that big would be eating small fish or medium-sized fish, but it's eating this plankton instead.
Well, the biggest shark, in fact, the biggest mammal under the water is the whale shark, which is really long. Some of them are as long as 3 buses long, some of the big ones. And they go certain places in the ocean to have their babies every year, and people like to go and see these whale sharks when they come in. They've caught them off the coast of Taiwan before, and they see these fish with the big mouth. They're really big, but they don't bite you. They don't even have teeth. They eat plankton. So you'd see this huge thing. You'd say, that's scary, but they're not as scary as some of these little tiny, tiny things that might bite you.
Yeah, and we're talking about plankton, and actually plankton is very, very small, so small that we usually can't even see it with our eyes. It would be considered microscopic, something that you could only see under a microscope.
It's all these little kind of growing things in the water that they take like they're sort of like vegetables in a way.
And one of the unique fish that we see in the ocean, Doris, is the remora, and that's in line 10 in our first column. And a remora is a fish that has a suction disc on the top of its head, and it will attach itself. For instance, the manta rays, often you will see a remora attached to a shark, so it kind of hangs along for the ride.
Well, there's a lot of little fish that attach themselves on other fish, and they eat off the growth and the barnacles, and also they have a cleaning station. The fish go and get cleaned by these other fish. Pretty interesting.
So actually, if I were the larger fish, I would appreciate the smaller fish helping to clean me up like
right.
this.
And
that's actually what they do.
That's what they do. They help cleaning stations where they go and these little fish eat those things off of them, and then they can go away cleaned up again.
For instance, you'll see in Africa, hippos will have little birds on them, and their job is to clean them. So the remora does the same thing.
Right. Well, as you can see, a lot of interesting things in nature. I hope you all watch some of the National Geographic channel and some of the other channels that we can watch on our television where we can see all kinds of nature. It's really interesting, isn't it? But let's find out where this is. Now, this Murray Island is 12 miles west of Tahiti, and you need to look at the next page, 21, to see where all these places are. And that's a huge area. How big did you say this archipelago is?
That actually spreads over an area the equivalent of Europe, Doris.
That is a very big area. So if you're in the South Pacific, you could be on any of these little islands, but of course they're not all inhabited, are they?
They're not all inhabited. Some of them are so small that there's nobody living there.
Okay, well, let's have our little skit for today.
Last time, Igor and Charlie, two sharks in the South Pacific, had noticed several divers in the area when suddenly they were approached by a group of dolphins.
Dolphins! Run away! Run away!
Oh, relax. We didn't come here to terrorize you sharks. We came here to play with the humans.
Besides, you can't run. You don't even have legs.
Play with the humans? Why would you want to do that? Do they give you fish?
You sharks! All you ever think about is food.
Yeah, we have better things to do with the humans than eat.
Oh yeah? Like what?
Like swimming in formation with the humans and zigging in and out of their air bubbles.
And singing to them by echolocating.
And swimming with them to the bottom to explore the coral heads on the ocean floor.
It's so much fun!
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, that's just fascinating.
Oh, what do you know? You're just silly sharks.
Yeah, dolphins are the smartest animals on Earth, next to humans.
Huh? What do you mean?
Come on, Charlie. Let's go catch some fish. Let's leave these dolphins to their humans.
Never mind them. They're just eating devotees.
Yeah, we get to share the majestic ocean with our human friends.
Well, I must have missed those dolphins when I was scuba diving. I never heard any sounded like that, did you?
Oh, me neither.
Yeah, right. Well, I think those were human dolphins, but it was kind of fun to think about what the animals might be thinking about. And I think probably, Ethan, some of you have been seeing too many of those cartoon movies, right? Those
we
are fun, though.
Talking right? Dolphins
like
and
the
Shark's
Tale, you know, Nemo and some of those. But it is beautiful, and we're going to talk about this more when we come back tomorrow. We're going to finish the article. But think about where you might go to relax. And if you get out of the office and the city and all the buildings, go to some place where you can enjoy nature and have a very good time doing it this summer. But you can always take your MP3 and listen to Studio Classroom and advance wherever you are. So thanks for being with us today. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Goodbye.
Goodbye.